All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another sterling rendition of the House Money Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Wolfman J. No Sharp G again today. Who knows what's going on in that guy's mind any given day at any given time. He should be back for the next one, though, so we'll see what happens there. But the first thing I want to talk about, and I got to get this off of my chest, is the Clay Matthews. He keeps bitching about getting these rough in the passer penalties, and regardless of what anybody thinks about the rule, whether it's soft, whether they're treating quarterbacks like pansies, it doesn't matter. It's in the rule book that you can't sack the quarterback and drive him into the ground with your shoulder. Clay Matthews keeps sacking the quarterback and driving him into the ground with his shoulder. It's against the rules. You have to adjust. You have to pull up. You have to pull off. And you have to find another way to put him on the ground. So quit bitching about it. And I know that I don't like Clay Matthews. I know I don't like the Packers. So that probably enhances my annoyance with the situation more so than it would with another player or another team. However, quit bitching about it and adjust to the damn rule. It's in the freaking rule book. You can't do it. Anyway, now that that's out of the way, let's talk about what happened in week three. And I want to start out with the I told you so's. And I need a bell to ring. And I'm going to call this I told you, motherfucker. I just came up with that right now. The Indianapolis Colts plus 6. I called that last week, and that game played out exactly like I thought it would. That was my 5-star gold super sizzler of the week. And I knew that Carson Wentz was going to be a little rusty, and it was going to take him a minute to get back into, game action, game speed, all that stuff. And I figured that the Colts, Andrew Luck is working himself back too, but he's been playing, he's been getting the reps, and he's getting more acclimated every week, and he's progressing every week. So he was a little bit further ahead than Carson Wentz was, and I figured that the Colts would be able to keep it close. And they lost 20-16. However, they cover the .6. So ding, ding, ding. Ring the bell, Wolfman J. Your 5-star super sizzler was right on the money. Let's go. I went 7-5 over the week. So I finish at roughly 60-ish% quick math. 7 out of 12 is like, what is that? That's probably more than 60%. I don't know. We'll have to get the stat guy on that. But anyway, I got the Redskins and the Packers as well. I changed that one midweek when I found out that your guy, Alex Smith, the quintessential game manager, is actually 4th since 2011 in winning percentage as a starting NFL quarterback behind guys named Peyton, Tom, and Aaron. So, Aaron. So, when I found that stat out, and then I started to think about the Packers, they are all about the quarterback. It's all about the quarterback in Green Bay. They don't really have a lot else. They have Randall Cobb, and then they have Clay Matthews driving quarterbacks into the ground with a shoulder, and that's pretty much all they have. And I figured that at some point the knee was going to be an issue, and you could see that, I watched a lot of that game. You could see that Aaron Rodgers isn't, even though he's still good and he could still put up numbers, but he's just not the same dude. That's a tough place to play, and Redskins were fired up coming off of the loss to the Indianapolis Colts, the +6 Indianapolis Colts, so I knew that was going to be a tough game. Plus, if Adrian Peterson, 20 carries for 120 yards, if he could sustain this level for a while, the Redskins could win some games because you got winner Alex Smith there. So we'll see what happens there, but I flipped my pick to the Redskins midweek. I was liking the Packers. I flipped to the Redskins. They end up covering. So good on them. Anytime the Packers lose, they're 1-1-1. The Vikings are also 1-1-1. Segway, they got their ass kicked by the Bills. And that was beautiful. Josh Allen was zinging the ball all over the place in the first half. They just weren't ready. Like, they thought that the Bills were coming to town. This was going to be a little ho-hum. We're going to fucking whoop their ass. And the Bills came in and fucking laid the wood to the Minnesota Vikings. Now, that was a trap game. That was, you look up trap game in the dictionary, you're going to find the Bills-Vikings game, and you're going to find the Cardinals-Bears game. I'll talk about that one in a little bit. But the Bills, 17 points in the first quarter, a bunch of turnovers. They were getting after it, and they needed that. When you're on the road and you're a shitty team and you're 0-2, you need some momentum, nothing's really going your way, and you put 17 on the board in the first quarter, that is exactly what they needed to do. They went 27-0 at halftime. They didn't score in the second half, but they didn't need to. And I wonder, the Vikings were coming off of the emotional tie with the Packers at Lambeau, where they had to come back, get the two-point conversion. Clay Matthews got the driving, drove Kirk Cousins into the ground with his shoulder, got the penalty. And so, but they definitely were overlooking the Bills. They got the Rams Sunday. So this was the definition of a trap game. And I wonder, they were 16.5 point favorites. I think they opened up at 17.5. I wonder if at any point during a game, a 17 point home favorite has ever been trailing by 27 or more points in a game. Like, I doubt it. Like, that was probably an historical beatdown by the Bills as far as underdogs go, winning games on the road. Maybe even you want to throw another wrinkle into that. How about winless underdogs? They got destroyed the first 2 weeks of the season, and it was ugly. It wasn't even close. They moved the ball a little bit in week two in the second half when Josh Allen started to move them, and they were playing better in that second half. And wow, so it looks like I want to see how good Josh Allen is. He looked really good. I watched some of that game. I watched most of that first quarter, and Josh Allen looks like he can make some throws, and he's big. So I'm going to do a segment in this episode about the young quarterbacks, the first or second year guys. I'm going to rank them, and that's going to be on a segment later in the show, so look out for that. But let's keep this moving. Just this quick rundown. The Panthers beat the Bengals. I had the Panthers at -3. I just figured Carolina's good at home. Cam Newton plays well at home. Andy Dalton is putting up huge numbers this year for the Bengals, though. They're 2-1, but it looks like he is primed for a big year. He had 350-some-odd passing yards and 2 touchdowns, but it wasn't enough to overcome Christian McCaffrey and his 184 yards. And the Panthers were able to win. Again, they play better at home. Cam Newton is better at home. And I got to be honest, I was wrong about Christian McCaffrey. I didn't think he was big enough to take the grind of the NFL. And, you know, a year and a couple games in, it looks like he isn't slowing down at all. He's a big weapon for them, quick as shit. And then I didn't think he'd be able to play within the tackles. And it looks like that he's shifty like that. Sometimes you get a small running back and he's shifty enough to play in there. He's not powerful. He's not going to break any tackles, right? But he's shifty enough to where he can get through and make it happen that way. There's two types of guys that could do that. There's one guy that's Jordan Howard can run it between the tackles because he's strong, and Christian McCaffrey is shifty enough. But then you get him outside, and he's dangerous. Once you get him to the second level, he's a threat to take to the house every time. So I thought that he was going to be a bust, and it looks like he's proven the old J-man wrong. So we'll keep an eye on that. The white running back syndrome. I got white running back syndrome, I'm not going to lie. And especially, like, he's a small dude, so who knows. But Eddie McCaffrey, bloodlines there. Can't go wrong. Let's keep moving here. I got the Titans. They went outright against the Jags. I had them at +10. That was a lot of points laying in an intra-division game. Just when you think the Jags are here, they've arrived, and Blake Bortles has taken that step to elite quarterback. He has a 155-yard game, and they score 6 points. So, be interesting to see what Jalen Ramsey has to say about that. That's pretty much what I want to talk about. I had the Broncos against the Ravens. They shit the bed in the second half. Actually, they didn't score after the first quarter, and the Ravens just methodically 27-14. Broncos didn't cover the 5.5. I started to come around on Case Keenum. I was starting to become a believer in the old game managing Von Miller defense / game manager thing. Maybe the Broncos are legit like that, and they're going to be able to win games and they're going to be good, and they're going to be one of those teams, kind of like how the Chiefs were for like five, you know, under Andy Reid and Alex Smith, and then they get, you know, the Ravens beat them. So, missed that one. It happens. I also missed the Chargers and the Rams throughout the record books when those two LA teams meet in the storied rivalry. But the Rams look like, now they got some injuries, Talib and Peters, they're hurt. Unfortunately for them, you hate to see your starting cornerbacks go down, so keep your eye on the injury report there. They probably have enough talent on defense to sustain it for a while, but you want to get those your cornerbacks back sooner than later. Jared Goff looks like he is taking the next step. That dude is putting up fucking at 354 yards passing, three TDs. So that's scary. If he's good, he develops and he takes another step into that next tier of quarterback. Rams are scary good. You already got Todd Gurley running all over the place. Another 100-yard game for him. That's pretty standard. I thought maybe the Chiefs would keep that game close. I think they were getting 7, maybe 7.5, but the Rams look like the real deal. They look like they're 3-0 right now between them and the Chiefs. It's hard to tell who looks better. Rams look like they're that team that's going to finish like 14-2 and then, you know, go into the playoffs. And those 14-2 teams, they always struggle in the playoffs because everything comes so easy in the regular season. So it kind of has that little smell a little bit. If I could put that smell on the Rams right now. So keep your eye on that. I had the Seahawks over the Cowboys. -1. The Cowboys are all Ezekiel Elliott and a defense, and that's it. Dak Prescott is not an above average quarterback. I'll say it again. I had hopes for him when he was a rookie, but he's not an above average quarterback. They weren't not going to go to Seattle and win that game. Seattle needed to win. Ezekiel Elliott needs to get the ball more. I mean, he had 16 carries in that game. He needs way more touches for Dallas to be successful. Dak Prescott, anytime you can take the ball out of his hands, they don't have any playmakers on the outside. So the no receivers combined with Dak Prescott, you got Jason Witten calling games in the booth. Dez Bryant is who knows where he is. He's probably on a spirit mission somewhere, finding a spirit animal. Who knows, but that's, anyway, recipe for disaster. Dallas is not going anywhere. The NFC East, like I said, they're probably the bottom of the barrel in that division. I like the Eagles, Redskins, and the Giants better than them. So, going to be a tough year in Big D. They play better at home, though. So, if you're going to play the Cowboys and you're going to look at the points or whatever, they do play a lot better at home. And if Ezekiel Elliott gets rolling, that could be big. But I don't think they're going to do anything. Monday night game last night, Steelers and the Buccaneers. I took the Buccaneers. I believed in Fitzmagic. And he had 3 picks, and he didn't play as well. However, he is the first quarterback in NFL history to have 3 400-yard passing games in a row. So in his 14th season, Ryan Fitzpatrick, chest hair and full beard, like his chin strap barely fits over his beard. 400 yards passing in 3 straight games. He's the first ever quarterback to do it. The Steelers, they finally look pretty good. They tried to blow it. They tried to give the Bucs the backdoor cover. And the Buccaneers did have chances. They were losing that game like 30-10 at halftime. Steelers didn't score in the second half. The defense played better. But anytime you have Chris Conte starting on your defense, that's rough. He got absolutely shredded on that stiff arm where, like, he got absolutely his soul. They threw him through the stadium, Raymond James. That was a bad look for him. But I think the Steelers miss Le'Veon Bell. I still do. They're 1-1-1. They're in the 1-1-1 group with Cleveland, and that's a good segue. Mike Evans had a big game in that game, by the way. He's a stud. But yeah, so Tampa Bay, I figured that was a little smoke and mirrors just because they have the number one, they still have through 3 weeks, they have the number one offense in the NFL. However, their defense, I believe, is like last in completion percentage or second to dead last in completion percentage. So, but I believe they're pretty good against the run. So, but yeah, they're dead last in opponent completion percentage. So they're not stopping the pass. You know, you could pretty much throw all over them. However, they are I think they're bad against like yards per rush attempt. Let's take a look. And okay, I was dead wrong. They are actually really good. They're in the top 10. So you can throw on them. You just can't. And Big Ben did have a pretty good game. He got overshadowed a little bit by Fitzpatrick, but you'll have that. So now, segue to another 1-1-1 team. Actually, first I want to talk about the Saints. Drew Brees, the Falcons, I ended up losing that one just because they could not stop Drew Brees in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter or in overtime. Actually, neither team could stop each other. The Falcons would go up. Like, you figured it was going to be the last team to have the ball would win, or the first team that had the ball in overtime was going to win, and that's exactly what happened. Anytime those two teams play in the dome, either dome, it doesn't matter, they score tons of points. If you took the over on that one, good for you. But the Saints, Drew Brees, 2-1. The Falcons are a tough 1-2. They lost to the Saints and the Eagles so far this year. Those are two teams that are going to make some noise in the NFC. So the Falcons should bounce back. Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones on that team. Matty Ice should have a big year. But, I mean, Drew Brees, for fuck's sakes. Like, he's eventually going to slow down. But he had that spin move and dive into the end zone to tie the game. That was fucking, I mean, the guy is timeless, for crying out loud. Like, but his game is so, he's going to be able to age well because his game is, you know, he's a pocket passer and, you know, you don't, he's going to be able to get it done, you know, regardless. Saints beat the Falcons, big win for them. But let's talk about, is this NFL season rigged? Like, how rigged is this shit? You got Aaron Rodgers carted off the field in week one, comes back and leads a dramatic comeback win against the Bears. And, you know, he's everybody's darling for a week. Then you have the number one overall draft pick. The Cleveland Browns haven't won a game in 635 days, right? You have the number three pick, Sam Darnold, and the Jets beating you 14-0 in your house. And then Tyrod Taylor gets a concussion. And then all of a sudden, Baker Mayfield and all of his swagger comes off the bench and leads a dramatic second half comeback. And they win the game 21-17. That dude, in the second half alone, like, I think I've seen all I need to see. He is going to be a stud. Like, I don't need any more of a sample size. The ball just zips out of his hand. It comes out of his hand different. He can put some smoke on the ball. He can make all the passes. He's gonna struggle a little bit. You know, he's gonna go through, you know, where the rookie struggles. But once this dude figures it out, once he arrives and turns that corner, like, he's every bit of an elite quarterback, and he's going to be a good quarterback in this league. Probably, you know, in the top tier moving forward. And he's another one of those guys, those first or second year guys, that I'm going to rank a little bit later on. And I'm going to give that its own segment. And so we're going to see. I'm interested to see where my guy Mitch Trubisky falls in to that category. And I saved the best for last. Mitchell Trubisky. Let's talk about the Bears and the Cardinals. That was a good win for the Bears. That's a game that good teams win. They fell behind 14-0 early, and then the defense completely shut the fucking Cardinals down. Like, they were not, like, the Bears woke up and they got punched in the mouth early. They were not ready for that, and then they completely shut them down on defense. The Cardinals were fucking done. But the big question mark is still Mitch Trubisky, and the haters are coming in droves. Like, they're starting to come out. And he's a serviceable quarterback right now. I don't know about the upside anymore. I'm starting to see things that concern me. He's missing open receivers. He's not making the right reads. He's underthrowing the deep ball. His accuracy isn't there. Like, they told us he was accurate. They told us he was an accurate quarterback. We have not seen that. Everybody the defenders are like, well, this is his first season. He didn't do shit last year. But I don't buy that, because everybody was like, well, he's got to play. last year, everybody's like, he's got to play this year as a rookie. That's the only way he's going to learn. And now, this year, you're like, well, that doesn't count because he didn't learn shit because his team was horrible and the offense sucked and blah, blah, blah. Wait a minute. You can't have it both ways. This is his fifth. That was his 15th game in the NFL. So you can say what you want about experience and all that stuff. At the end of the day, that was his 15th game in the NFL. The game should be slowing down at least somewhat for him. He's got a really high completion percentage. I think it's like 8th, and he's 69% or something like that. But like 10 passes were completed behind the line of scrimmage. Or just you know what, like just ahead of the line of scrimmage. A lot of short passes, a lot of dink and dunk stuff that's really helping his percentage. His downfield throws, he's like bottom 5 in the league. But 15 games in, you got it, you know, 24 for 35, 220 yards and a pick. I don't like it. That was the first road game of the season, so, you know, I'm going to chalk it up to, you know, I'm just going to tell myself that he's going to keep progressing and he's going to keep getting better, and that was the first road game, and so after the first game, I was optimistic going into the season. Then after the first game, I was cautiously optimistic, and then after week two, it was starting to really waver, and now I'm not full-blown panic mode, you know. I started at about a 9.1. I'm down to about a 7.6. He could go a long way for himself to have a 300-yard passing game next week at home against the Buccaneers, who are coming in off a short week, and so they're gonna have some advantages there, and there's going to be controversy this week in Tampa. Who's going to start? Is it going to be Fitzpatrick? Is it going to be Jameis Winston? I think the Bucs would have won last night. You go with Fitzpatrick. Now, Jameis, that opens the door for Winston to come back in. His suspension ends. Like, actually, he probably won't start Sunday if I have to call it, because he hasn't taken any practice reps or anything like that. So they'll go with Fitzpatrick Sunday against the Bears, but they're going to work Winston back into that, I bet you. So, but anyway, back to the Bears and the Cardinals. But the defense played well. The Bears, the thing about it is that's so big about Trubisky is the fact that the Bears have everything else. Every other position they're good at. They're good. They're solid, and they're ready to win today, right now. And it's going to come down to how good Mitch Trubisky is. And if he's not the guy, then what? Do you draft another guy? They can't develop another quarterback. They would almost have to go out and bring in somebody who's already established. But it's got to be Trubisky. He's just got to be better. So let's hang our hat on that and keep our fingers crossed there. So that's basically it for week 3. Just a quick look ahead. Let's look at some point spreads next week for the NFL games. Dolphins and Patriots. Let's see. A big one here. Bears -3. That's a good. The Buccaneers are coming off a short week. I'll never bet on the Bears though because the question marks around Mitch Trubisky. But that looks good. The Chargers and the 49ers. They're going to be deflated. The Chargers are -10.5. They are going to be deflated in that game. The 49ers are. But they always say that it's always the next game after you lose your superstar that the team rises up and plays better. It's always the games after the first game where reality sets in and they start to suck. So I'll still take the Chargers to win that game, but the 10.5 points, like the 49, well, I don't know, and it's on the road. Never mind. Don't even fucking look at that game. The Saints going to the Giants. The Giants have tons of talent. I keep saying it. It's going to come down to Eli Manning. But the Saints are -3 there, coming off with a big overtime win at Atlanta. That was an emotional win. The Saints are a different team when they play outside. Drew Brees is still good, but they're not the same. They get off of that fast track. You know, they're a little different. They're not as good. So we'll see what happens there. That's going to be a good game. I would actually like to watch that game. The Ravens and the Steelers. Steelers minus 3. That's always a tough game. It looks like the Steelers are... they have so much talent everywhere. The only thing about the Steelers is the John Bostic is their linebacker. Like, their defense isn't a Steelers defense. John Bostic looks like a completely different player, though, with the Steelers. He actually looks like a Steeler guy that's always scary and just hits everyone and he's everywhere. So I don't know how they do that shit, but they transformed him. I don't know. He wears like the tinted mask now, and you know, he looks like a completely different dude. However, it's still John Bostic, so when is that going to catch up to them? The defense isn't the same, but it looks like they're starting to become the Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger, he's going to regress at some point and take a step back, but he's still like he's still a difference maker, and there's still plenty. He's still plenty good enough to win in the league. Another game that I want to watch: Cleveland. The Baker Mayfield show goes to Oakland next week. 0-3 Raiders. The Raiders are actually minus 2.5. I want to see how Baker Mayfield responds to that. He's the guy now. He's got the keys. He's never gonna not start another game barring injury for the Cleveland Browns as long as he's alive. So I want to see what it looks like. I want to see if that Jets thing, that Thursday night thing, they have the extra preparation time. They got the extra extra rest time. So that looks good for them. And the Oakland Raiders, you got to believe they're going to, I mean, and that's in the black hole too. So that's going to be an hectic environment for him. But you got to believe the Raiders, they're going to want to win. So you got to believe they're going to play hard. But then what's their mindset like? John Gruden, that thing is fucking a train wreck right now, and it looks like it's not getting any better. And fourth quarter Derek Carr has been absolutely terrible this year as well, and that's not typical of his play. So you know, another one that I like: the Eagles going to the Titans. The Eagles are going to be favored in that game. Right now it's 3.5. The Titans just beat the Jags. They're coming home. They're playing well. They just gave up 6 points to a team that was moving the ball up and down the field the first 2 weeks of the season. So that Jags win against the Patriots doesn't look as good with the way that the Lions handled the Patriots Sunday night as well. So, you know, who are the Jags? Are they for real? They're 7-point favorites against the Jets. Sam Darnold on the road. Don't like that. I'm still not sold on him. He played pretty decently in the first couple weeks. Not so much against the Browns. You saw kind of the rookie come out of him, especially in the second half. The Browns defense is good. So, but the Jags need to bounce back. They'll be ready for that one. Hopefully Leonard Fournette is ready, and because they're a different team when he is healthy. The Bills bought themselves 7 points, so they go into the Packers game only 10-point dogs. They're coming in with some momentum. Can they keep that going? Josh Allen at Lambeau, that's going to be interesting. That one's going to be the noon game in my area, so I'll probably watch that one. And, you know, but it comes down, how many shoulders is Clay Matthews going to drive into Josh Allen? What's the over-under on that one? But I don't know. I could see they're going to have to get off to a hot start. They're probably not going to be winning 17-0 in the first quarter, so that's going to be a better game. It's hard to tell. I mean, they could get blown the fuck out. Who knows? You know, what was that, just a fluke? Probably last week. They're definitely not that good as far as being up 27-0 on the road against a team with Super Bowl aspirations. But, you know, they look a little better with Josh Allen, you know, but a rookie quarterback on the road, consecutive weeks. They got it done last week. They picked up 7 points in the against the spread. They're only 10-point dogs, so I'll probably stay the hell away from that one. Another one, the last one that I want to talk about here is the Colts Texans. The Colts are favored by a point. Deshaun Watson, he's still putting up numbers. He's getting better every week. That's going to be an interesting game. It's all about the quarterbacks in that one. Which quarterback is going to play better? I like the Colts at home right now. The Texans are going to want to get a win. J.J. Watt is going to be a difference maker in that one. I'm going to keep my eye on that one. I'd like to be the smartest guy in the room, so I'm thinking about the Texans right now. But Andrew Luck and the Colts played well in Philly, kind of-ish. I think a healthy Carson Wentz, they probably win that game a little bit bigger. So, but we'll see what happens. Another big story, Jimmy G, Chucktown legend, ACL. That one was tough. That is tough. But that franchise, it's time to sing that eulogy. That is a huge blow to them. They actually, Matt Breida is like top five in Breida. Yeah, is top five in rushing this year. So he's going to have to pick that up. But the 49ers have nothing else. Like, they were banking all their chips in on Jimmy G. And that is huge. He's gone for at least a year now. So who knows what he's going to be when he comes back. That is just a crippling blow to a franchise, to a proud franchise that was trying to get back. They had their guy. He looked like the real deal. And he is now down, and you don't know. I mean, he's pretty much all that they had. So who knows there? I don't even know if I talked about Patrick Mahomes yet, but the Chiefs, the 49ers, I took that 6 points. The Chiefs covered it, but I want to talk about Mahomes. That dude, I believe that the struggles are still coming. If I could go back to week 3, I think the struggles are still coming. However, if he could sustain that level of play for all season, the Chiefs are up there with the Rams and maybe the Steelers and those type of teams as some of the best teams in the NFL. That thing looks like, it doesn't look like it's slowing down, and I figured it would by now. They only had 3 points in the second half last week, but if Patrick Mahomes is that dude, which it looks like he might be, that Chiefs team is scary, and they're a complete team. So, but the biggest news out of that one is Jimmy G going down. That's a tough blow for that team, that organization. So I don't know what they're going to do out there in the Bay, but we'll see. I feel for them. I know what it's like to be a fan of a team whose favorite player has an ACL, Kyle Schwarber / Rex Grossman. When I was a big Grossman guy, and he went down in his second year with the ACL when he was just going to be the starter and trying to establish himself in the league. And they had a really good team and a good defense, and then he went down. That was tough. That was a huge blow. I had a cutout of Rex Grossman on my kitchen cabinet. Cut it out of a newspaper, straight up black and white. That's how big I was on that guy and that team. And we saw what he turned into, but maybe the ACL had something to do with it. So there is your NFL update, the Wolfman J. We ran that one a little long, so we'll try to condense that a little bit. We go right off the cuff, though. We're no planning or anything. So just imagine how much shittier this show would be if we planned it out. You know what I mean? So, all right, I'm going to come back. I'm going to talk some NCAA football. Stay there. Blood out. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the House Money Sports Podcast, and welcome to the NCAA football rundown. Gonna talk a little bit about week 4. I just want to talk, I'm gonna talk against the spread because, you know, that's what I'm about, and that's what we're about here. I want to start to kick it off Friday night, a little Friday night lights. I thought my Illini, my Fighting Illini of Illinois, had arrived. There was a split second where I thought that they might win the game. Like, it was a really quick second, and it was actually in the third quarter. They took the opening drive, they score a touchdown, they go up 24-21, and at the worst, okay, you're thinking, maybe Lovey Ball, maybe we've arrived, maybe we're going to be competitive, you know, we might not win these games, but we're going to be in them, you know, we're not going to embarrass ourselves anymore. And, Lovey Smith needs to shave his beard. That beard is weird. But so we go up 24-21, then Penn State scores 42 points in a row in the second half. They win that game 63-24. Not only do they score 42 points in a row, but they cover the 27.5 point spread that looked really, really, really secure midway through the third quarter when Illinois was winning the game. So That was a tough one. If you took Illinois and you took the points, you were feeling pretty good about it in the third quarter. However, that was so Illinois to lose the game by 30 points from that point. Or was it 40? Yeah, 40 points. So, yeah. So let's just put that one in the garbage can. We're going to suppress that one with all the other the Illinois football games. That we're going on a 15-year rebuild. We're going strong, so someday. But we have Alabama. Let's talk about them. They beat Texas A&M. That was a close game for them. I feel like a 22-point win for Alabama this year is a relatively close game for them. So, you know, that was a barn burner. In Tuscaloosa. So Alabama, they're going to steamroll everybody. I'm going to crown their ass and I'm going to give them the national championship right now. They might as well just sit out so their pros don't hurt themselves, you know, and they can just get ready for the draft. That's actually what I would do. Let's just give them the championship. But how about it? We had a lot going on. There was actually a lot going on last week. There's not as much going on next week. But one game that I talked about, Akron and Iowa State. Akron was getting 19 points coming off the win at Northwestern. They won that game outright as double-digit underdogs, and they did cover the 19. So Iowa State won that game 26-13. However, Akron covers the point spread. Georgia, battle of the SEC. They went to Columbia and got a win there. You might as well just say that Georgia and Alabama are going to play in the SEC championship game. If there's ever a game that's going to be, you know, close for Alabama as far as like maybe under 20, it's going to be this one. Missouri quarterback Drew Lock, a lot of people have him, high draft pick in the NFL draft next year, played like shit. Jake Fromm actually outplayed him, the Georgia quarterback. So a lot of people think he might be the best quarterback in college. So in battle there, Jake Fromm comes out at the top of that one. Georgia gets the win. Notre Dame beat the shit out of Wake Forest. That was ho-hum. Maryland, I called that one. They were getting, they were minus one. And I felt like they were going to bounce back in this one. They had the emotional letdown last week against Temple. Temple's actually a good team, and I have them next week. Look out for them in the point spread next week. Just a little plug for them really quick. But Maryland, you knew they were going to bounce back. They had the big win against Texas, who's a good football team. I'll talk more about them in a minute. They bounced back against Texas. They had the big emotional letdown against Temple. All the shit that they dealt with in the offseason with the coach and all that stuff. Finally caught up to them last Saturday, but they bounced back. They're the better team, and they beat Minnesota pretty handily, and the game was at home, so good on them. Michigan beat the shit out of Nebraska. That game was ugly. I don't know what's going on in Nebraska. Scott Frost, the hero, you know, the golden boy, he was undefeated last year at UCF. He comes to Nebraska, where I'm pretty sure he won a Heisman there. Maybe not. I might have just made that up. But they look really bad. Like, Nebraska was pretty bad in the mid-00s, I believe, or like the early 00s to mid-00s. And they're not like they as good as they were in the 90s when they were paying players and juicing and on steroids and shit. But they look really bad. They got beat at home as double-digit favorites heading into this game to Troy, who is a small, you know, FBS school in Florida. So I don't know what's going on there. Scott Frost probably has a pretty big grace period, though. So we'll see if he can get that thing turned around. But that looks like there's a long rebuild ahead of them. So good luck to them. Michigan looks like they're starting to fucking steamroll. This is what they do. And they're going to make some noise. They're good. They finally have a quarterback. But for like the past 5 years, I'm like, if Michigan could just get a quarterback, they'd be really good. And now Shea Patterson, he's good. The Ole Miss transfer, he's competent, I guess you could say. Regardless, you know, is he good? We'll find out. But he is definitely the best quarterback that they've had in a long time. So look out for Michigan. Purdue, Boston College. Purdue won that game. I had that one. Boston College was minus, I think, 6.5. That one wasn't. Purdue is a good team. They're playing at home. West Lafayette, they roll over Boston College. Boston College they have a good quarterback and a good running back, but you know, other than that, they're not a team that's going to go on the road in the Big Ten, and they shouldn't be a 6.5-point favorite on the road. So Purdue wins that game outright. It wasn't even close. Buffalo is a good team. The Buffalo Bulls, keep your eye on them. They're undefeated right now, 4-0. They beat the shit out of Rutgers. Rutgers is terrible. They lose to everybody by 40. However, Buffalo, they went on the road and beat a Big Ten school handily, handled them. And they're 4-0. Look out for them. Another game I want to talk about, Cincinnati against Ohio. Throw out the record books. The makings of a good team is when you fall behind and you get punched in the mouth, and then you're able to respond, come back, and win the game through adversity. Cincinnati was able to do that against a rival, Ohio Bobcats. Ohio isn't that good, but they were winning that. I think they were 24-7 at the half. And Cincinnati came off the mat, came back, won the game. They didn't cover the point spread, though, but they won. And that's big. And that builds character, by God. And I like Cincinnati this year. They're 4-0. And that was a game that you had to just grit it out and win. And they did. So good on the Bearcats. Virginia beat Louisville, housed them in their house, and that's big to know because Virginia goes to South Carolina next week, and I'll talk more about that one later. That's going to be a good ball game. So just going through it, maybe possibly the upset of the year. Old Dominion beat Virginia Tech at home 49-35. They scored 28 points in the fourth quarter. But here's the thing. Old Dominion was 0-3 coming into this game. They had scored 55 points combined in the three losses, and they put up 49 against Virginia Tech. That is a really bad look for Virginia Tech team, who was ranked 13th in the country. Excuse me for that. That was kind of gross. But that Virginia Tech loss was kind of gross, too. They're probably a little worried there. Let me see. Kansas, they are who we thought they were. They got beat by Baylor. Baylor's actually 3-1, and they're putting up some offensive numbers. If we can go inside those numbers, I'm going to get into the numbers a little bit on later on in the week during the next show when we preview. I'm gonna quick run down to next week, and then I'm going to really preview it later on in the week. West Virginia beat the shit out of Kansas State. Kansas State just isn't that team anymore that's going to you know, just come in and sneak up on people. Like they usually do, like they're never favored. However, they're always pretty good, and they always kind of find a way to backdoor the point spread, and they're not that team anymore. So going forward, Kansas State, just know that they're not those guys. West Virginia looks good. They got a big game against Texas Tech next week. Texas Tech has the number one passing offense in the country, and West Virginia is favored in that one by 3.5 right now. West Virginia is the real deal, and they have everything. But Texas Tech at home, coming off of their win against Oklahoma State in week 4, which I had Oklahoma State 14.5-point favorites. Texas Tech goes there and wins outright. That's a big win for that team. And they handled them pretty well. So that is a game, West Virginia, Texas Tech. That's going to be a good game. And usually when you get teams like that that just pass up and down the field, they're going to score a lot of points. Those games could get out of hand one way or the other. I don't think West Virginia is going to get blown out, but West Virginia could blow them out. So is Texas Tech for real? For real, for real, for real? For real, for real? We're going to find out Saturday. But that 3.5 points at home is definitely a looker for Texas Tech. Arizona needed a win. I called that one. I picked it. I figured Khalil Tate was due for a good game. He had a good game. He had a big game. He needed to break out. They beat Oregon State. This isn't fucking college baseball, so the Beavers suck at every other sport that the university participates in. Arizona won that game. They got USC next week. At Arizona, USC is going to be favored in that game because they beat Washington State. And we're not believers yet in Arizona, so when we'll get into that a little bit. Arizona played USC. I think they beat USC at USC last year in the Rose Bowl. Sam Darnold cost me some money in that game, I'm pretty sure. My memory serves me correctly. South Carolina, I don't know why the fuck I took Vanderbilt. Never, ever, ever, ever take Vanderbilt football and put your money on them. They got blown out at home by South Carolina. you know, they were 2-1 going into the game, Vanderbilt, and they had a chance to do something, and they completely shit the bed in the second half. So, yeah, I mean, never bet on Vanderbilt football, alma mater of Jay Cutler, of one Jay Cutler. But, yeah, South Carolina, they have a big game next week against the aforementioned Virginia Cavaliers. That's a game of teams coming off big wins. It's in South Carolina. So when we look at that point spread, that's a game that we're going to want to look at. Virginia, they look good in their win. So, Troy and UL Monroe, I'm going to talk about this game. I tried to be the smartest guy in the room and take UL Monroe in this game because when I saw how bad Michigan was beating Nebraska, I put less value on the Troy win at Nebraska. UL Monroe was getting 5.5 points at home, and I said, you know what? They're 2-1. Troy is 2-1. But that Nebraska win, how big was that? So let me take UL Monroe. Let me try to sneak one in here. And it was Troy beat the shit out of them. It was 35-7 at halftime. Troy didn't score in the second half, and UL Monroe tried to backdoor me. They beat them 20-0 in the second half, but still, they dug themselves too big of a hole, lost by 8. They almost got under that 5.5, but not enough. Too little, too late, and so that's what I get for trying to outsmart myself. So how about Kentucky housing the 4-0 Wildcats, traditional football school, crushes Mississippi State, and a lot of people were big on Mississippi State. They have talent both sides of the ball, but Kentucky is the team that comes out of this one 4-0, and they look like they could be some spoilers. And not only that, but they look like they're a pretty complete team. I mean, you know, they were 9.5-point underdogs. That was actually a super sizzler of the Wolfman Jay, and I took Kentucky, so there you have it. Another one that I had, well, I'll talk about these two. Michigan State, I took Indiana in the 5.5. That was fucking stupid. I do that all the time. Indiana scores points, and I think they're playing at home, and they're going to be able to hang with these the higher caliber Big Ten teams like Michigan State and Michigan, and they never fucking do, and they always get blown out. They were actually in the game. They scored some points at the end of the game to make it a little closer than it should have been. But in the end of the day, Michigan State is the better team. So never fucking bet on Indiana against one of the top tier teams in the Big Ten. I do that a lot, and I always regret doing it. It's kind of like when you fucking get drunk and then you're like, why do I do that? Same thing with Indiana. Why do I do that? They'll beat teams like Ball State and shit. They'll score 100 points against them and they'll blow them out. But yeah, that's just don't bet on Indiana either. Stanford and Oregon completely fucking collapsed. Their quarterback had 2 incompletions in regulation and he had 5 incompletions in overtime. Oregon was winning that game by 10 points with like 3 minutes left. They were up at 1 point, 24-7. Winning by 10 with 3 minutes left, and they end up losing the game in overtime. Stanford, 7th in the country. They go to Notre Dame next week. I think that's going to be an interesting point spread, too. We'll take a look at that. But Oregon, choke job, and they got a tough game next week against Cal, they didn't play this week, so they're coming off a bye, 2 weeks to prepare for Oregon. Oregon's going to be a little emotionally down the way that they lost that game. So look out for California. Look out for the Golden Bears in that one. I think Oregon's favored by 3. So they should cover that. But you got to wonder what their mind state is coming off of that loss. Another one, Wisconsin and Iowa. I called that one. BYU beat Wisconsin as double-digit underdogs, but BYU is pretty good. They have a big game next week. We'll talk about that. However, Iowa, you know, I always do that too. I think that they're going to win every game they play at home, no matter who it is, or at least I think they're going to cover. Wisconsin was actually favored in the game, and they cover that point spread pretty. They covered by 11. They had a late touchdown that really blew that thing open. The over-under on that one was a bad beat, as Wisconsin, I think, busted like a 40-yarder. to get the over with like 20 seconds left when they could have just been kneeling the ball. So fuck them for that. Anybody knows how bad that hurts. And so fuck Wisconsin for that one. One more really quick. Washington, Arizona State, Herm Edwards' own Arizona State Sun Devils put up a fight against Washington in Seattle. They only lost by 7. They covered the 18. I was on that one. So I had a pretty good day in college football. And I'm going to end this segment with a thing I would like to call Guess Who's Back. Guess Who's Back. And this is where we need the sound. This is where we need the sounds. But Florida, 47 points in Knoxville, and they handled Tennessee. So that's more like it for the Gators. They house Tennessee in their house. Are they back? They're 3-1. It looks like Florida's been playing like shit the last couple of years, but that's a big win for them. And then another one, Texas beat TCU. I picked the Longhorns, hook 'em horns. Do they got something going down there in Austin? Like, what they got something brewing? They beat USC and TCU back-to-back weeks, and that was actually a two-score win for them against TCU, a team that was favored. TCU was favored coming into that game, so hook 'em horns, and it looks like they might have something going there. Let's look ahead to next week really quick. Let's look at some of the let's see if there's any lookers on here. I had a couple ready to go. Buffalo, Army almost beat Oklahoma last week. I didn't want to talk about that one because it's not even worth it. Oklahoma didn't care about that game and went into overtime. They ended up winning. They would have all jumped off a bridge simultaneously if Oklahoma would have lost that game. But they were able to win, so you know, whatever. Buffalo is real. Army is not that good. They're good enough to. But what's their emotional state going to be like? I'm big on that. Like, what's the mind state? And are they going to be able to play at that level 2 weeks in a row? Buffalo's a good team. A lot of people are going to be going with Army because of the way that they almost beat Oklahoma. But Oklahoma didn't care. Oklahoma took that game for granted, and they were sluggish all the way. Buffalo's not going to do that. They're going to be ready. So that could be a double-digit win for Buffalo, and they're only -9. Keep your eye on that one. Let's see. Temple and Boston College. This is the one. This is my super sizzler of the week. Boston College is -13.5. Temple is good. They beat Maryland at a good Maryland team at Maryland. They beat Tulsa. They lost, I believe, to a team they shouldn't have lost to in week one. I'm going to have to look that up. I should probably have that ready. But like I said, we're off the cuff. Man, they're a good team. 13.5 points is way too many for Boston College. Boston College beat Wake Forest, but Wake Forest isn't that good. I think they beat Wake Forest by like 7 or something like that. And then you saw how good they were. Notre Dame, who hasn't beaten anybody good this year, and they've looked really bad against the other teams. They beat Wake Forest by 30 at their house. So that Boston College win against Wake Forest, I think it was like a 7-point win. That doesn't look very good. They just got their shit, their doors blown off at West Lafayette. Take Temple in 13.5 right there. Tell them Wolfman J sent you. Clemson, Syracuse. Syracuse has a good quarterback by the name of Dungy. He's a gamer. He's a competitor. He doesn't take any plays off. I've watched a lot of their games for some reason. And he plays hard. He plays hard from beginning to end. So no matter what, they're a candidate for a backdoor cover just by the way that kid plays. However, Clemson is a different animal at home. I would never bet any kind of point spread. They're 22-point favorites. Syracuse is actually a pretty quality team. So 22 points is a lot, but Clemson's a different animal at home, so stay away from that one. South Carolina, Kentucky. Okay, so I had it wrong. It's actually South Carolina and Kentucky. Kentucky's at home, 1-point favorite. South Carolina beat Vanderbilt, but fuck Vanderbilt anyway. I like Kentucky in this game. They're playing well. They're 4-0, and they have the momentum, and it looks like they're a complete team. I just can't see them beating Mississippi State 1 week and then losing South Carolina the next week at home. They're going to be ready to play. They're going to be fired up, and I got Kentucky in that one. Virginia and North Carolina State. That's where they're going. Now, North Carolina State beat Marshall. I always like Marshall as an underdog for some reason. North Carolina State, they have an NFL quarterback, Finley. Virginia played well last week, but North Carolina State, they should be better at home. That 6 points is very interesting. I don't know which way I'm leaning yet. Check back with me later on this week, and I'll let you know. But that's gonna be an interesting game. I might watch a little bit of that one just to see how the teams look. Ohio State, Penn State, that's always a fun game. Penn State beat Illinois by 40, but they've struggled at times. Penn State has this year. Ohio State, -3.5, they're undefeated. So that's gonna be a good game. You have Urban Meyer coming back for this one. You have McSorley from Penn State. He's playing at a huge level. That dude is freaking good. So that'll be a good game. It always is when those two teams play each other. Iowa State and TCU. TCU's favored by 10.5. I like this game. For some reason, I'm riding with the Cyclones in this one. They have an NFL running back. Kemp, they have a good quarterback. They survived their, trap game last week against a good Akron team, and they won it. So, just be on the lookout for that one. I like Iowa State there. I just think that TCU is not that good, and I think Iowa State, TCU is going to win the game, but I don't think it's a two-score game, and if it is, it's no more than 10 points, so that half a point there is big. Roll with the Clones. West Virginia and Texas Tech, that's another one that I like. West Virginia is 3.5-point favorites. Texas Tech has the number one passing offense in the country. I am probably going to ride with Texas Tech in that one. If it's a field goal game, maybe it's a field goal game. If that jumps up the floor, that would be huge. But I don't know. It's tough. Check back with me later on in the week for that one as well. Purdue, -3 at Nebraska. Who knows with Nebraska? They have a freshman quarterback who's probable. I don't even know. Purdue looked good. They beat Boston College. Looks like they're a mediocre team that could beat some people, and then they could lose to anybody too. So who knows with that one. Louisiana Tech and North Texas. North Texas is a good team. They're undefeated. They win a lot of games by a lot of points. It's funny because Louisiana Tech is always that Conference USA kind of lower tier FBS team that's always good. And to see them 7.5-point underdogs to Texas Tech is weird. However, Texas Tech is a good team. They have a lot of good stats. If you're a stats guy, so they probably haven't played anybody that good yet. But 7.5 points, that's a lot against Louisiana Tech. They just played LSU and lost by 17 to them, but that's kind of a rivalry game, even though it probably shouldn't be. So let's move on. And USC Arizona, USC 3.5, that's a good one. Khalil Tate looks like he is starting to play well. They need him to play well if they're going to do anything. Stanford, Notre Dame -4.5. It's Stanford coming in off the big Oregon win, so they're going to be flying high. Notre Dame has kind of been treading water. They beat Wake pretty handily, but this is going to be their first real test. So I don't think that they're 4.5. I don't think they win that game by 4.5 points. I think it's a field goal game either way. And then Oregon and California, Oregon -3, Cal coming off of the bye week, 2 weeks to prepare for them, Oregon with the huge letdown loss. So that would be interesting. Check back later on in the week, and I'll have my picks for all the college football games. So there you have it. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to rate all the young quarterbacks, the first and second year quarterbacks, and we'll be right back with that. But out. Welcome back to House Money Sports. I'm Wolfman Jay, and here is your young quarterback rankings here on House Money. Here's your House Money Sports quarterback, young quarterback rankings. Now, I put Jared Goff and Carson Wentz in this category. The only reason Carson Wentz probably graduated from this, however, he came back because of the knee injury. So it's like he's coming back for his master's degree. He's already graduated, but he's coming back in, and so he's going to be included in this list. I put Dak Prescott because I need somebody to be worse than Mitch Trubisky, even though he's kind of a third year guy and he's established as far as, you know, it looks like Jerry Jones is content to just ride with this dude. So I'm putting him in there. I think 3 years and down, you know, qualifies you. So let's go right now. Like, obviously, okay, so you're going to go with the hot guy. Like, you're going to ride the hot hand, right? Like, it's what have you done for me lately? Like, what's fresh in your mind is always going to be, he's going to take precedent over, like, a full body of work, right? So Patrick Mahomes, you have to put at the top of this list right now. He's setting the league on fire. He's the guy. He's everybody's fucking darling. He's, like, taking over for Andy Reid's offense and just going up and down the field. But they have tons of weapons. He's been in the system for 2 years. But you can't argue with record-breaking touchdown passes, you know, by week four. So, you know, you got to go with Mahomes there. Now, this is also like how good I think they're going to be. Not necessarily how good they are right now. I think this is long-term. How, you know, this is the ceiling, you know, like we're looking 8 years down the road, who's going to be the best out of these guys. So right now I put Jimmy G in this as well. I don't like ACL quarterbacks. I've said it again, and it's tough for me to gauge those guys, but I have Patrick Mahomes here. I think he might be a generational talent, but I still think he's going to struggle this year. So remember, I told you that, and I'm going to come back. I'm going to say, I told you, motherfucker. But, so I have Mahomes at number one. It's a toss up. This one was really tough, but I took Baker Mayfield ahead of Jared Goff. Just that one half that I saw out of Baker Mayfield looked, he's got a lot of Brett Favre. He's got the moxie. You know, that's a big word with Mayfield, but I think that, you know, I don't usually buy into that shit, but he's got it. And he made all the throws, and he made it look pretty easy against the Jets defense that was good to great first 2 weeks of the season. I think they turned Stafford over like four times with four picks. So he looked good there. And I think long haul, I think Baker Mayfield is number two. I like Jared. I like Carson Wentz. I like him right there just because, you know, he was a superstar before he had the ACL. And you have to think that, like, we've seen quarterbacks come back from that. He looks like a hard worker. And he's not going to be a guy that rests on what he did and, oh, poor me, I have an ACL. He's going to come back. He's going to work harder. So I put him there at three. Then I go Deshaun Watson. He looked like the thing about him is mobile quarterbacks like that. A lot of his thing was mobility. If he could turn into a pocket passer, he's got all the tools. I got to go with him at number four. Jared Goff at number five. I think he's got all the tools. He's a pocket passer. He's going to put up some big numbers in LA. They're going to be good. They're going to have good teams. So, but actually the Rams are like, I believe a surprising defensive stat for them is opponent's yards per rush. I think the Rams are down at five. And you wouldn't think that with Aaron Donald and those guys over there in LA. But that should correct itself before the season's over. But so I got Goff at five right behind Deshaun Watson. I think he's going to be on good teams. He's going to be on a big stage. And he's going to have moments where he can actually move up this list. So, but right now, he's at five. And then I got Josh Allen. I liked what I saw out of him. Not a lot of people were big on him. They took him six. He's got the size. He's got the arm. But does he have what it takes to be an NFL quarterback? I saw it in Minnesota. And he passed the eye test for the first time that I saw him. So I'm going to go with him six. Jimmy G, I think I go with him 7. He's going to come back off the ACL. He's going to be the same dude. He could. A lot of his game was mobility. He still has the big arm. He's still going to have every opportunity to be the guy in San Francisco. He's going to get, you know, is he going to be able to stay healthy? Big question marks. I don't know. This list is tough with all these ACL injuries, but I got Jimmy G at 7. Then I put Sam Darnold. Not a big believer in Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is the dude where he could be a complete bust or he could be number one on this list before it's all said and done. He's got all the tools. He didn't look good in Cleveland in the second half. And I didn't see it when he was at USC. He's one of those guys where he shows flashes of absolute brilliance. But when he shits the bed and tanks it out, he fucking tanks. Like, Sam Darnold could do train wreck pretty well. I put him up there with like Jay Cutler level train wreck. When he's on his train wreck game, he could do it with any of them. So, and I've seen it before. And usually, but he has those moments where he looks like he might be the best quarterback to ever play the game too. It's weird. It's like so opposite ends of the spectrum with him, but I don't know if he's ever going to be consistent, so I have him at number 8. And then I got my guy, Mitch Trubisky, at number 9. He hasn't shown that he does really anything at an elite level or even a great level. He's been very mediocre in the 15 games. You kind of wrote it off last year as he doesn't have any weapons and this and that. But this year he's missing throws. They move the ball a little bit, but upside, I'm just not seeing it with him anymore. He can run, but that's always not good. You know, you don't want to have to rely on your legs that much in the NFL. We see it. And he does quite a bit. And he's not making good decisions. And again, that Bears team is ready to win now. And it's all about him. If he can be good, they're going to be great. If he can be great, they're going to be elite. They have a defense that can win. And the defense is going to be special before the season's over. They're only going to get better. That thing's going to be good. They have position. Every other position is solid on that team. So if Trubisky can be good, I got him at number 9 behind those guys. And then the last two, Josh Rosen, he looked fucking terrible. Small body of work, small sample size. It's going to take more to see him. So he's kind of like number 10 by default. And then Dak Prescott, not a believer in him. Nothing really great about him. Can move a little bit. Kind of a big arm, but he's had a lot of weapons there in Dallas and hasn't put up any kind of big numbers. I don't know. I'm not a big Dak Prescott guy. He could probably slide up the list. I just don't think he's going to be any better than any of these dudes ahead of him. So maybe Trubisky. I don't know. Right now, if you had to say the biggest bust on the list, the biggest bust candidate on this list is Trubisky. He's probably the number one candidate right now for who's going to be a bust. You can't really say any of these other guys are going to be a bust except for maybe Josh Rosen. Dak Prescott probably shouldn't even count because he was a third or fourth round pick. I can't remember which one, but you can't really call those guys too much of a bust. He's probably not going to be an elite level quarterback ever in his career, but as far as a bust, when we're talking, you know, top 10 pick, I think all these other guys were picked in the top 10 or pretty close. Except for Jimmy G, he was in the second round, but all these other guys. I got to go with Trubisky as a candidate to be the biggest, you know, the best candidate to be a bust so far out of what I've seen. Maybe Josh Allen, 1A and 1B there. And then the guy that has a chance to be a future Hall of Famer, Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's probably the number one candidate to be the guy that's a generational type of talent. And then right now with what you've seen so far. And Deshaun Watson could have been there, but the ACL, a lot of question marks. And then Baker Mayfield, we need to see more, but you like what you've seen so far. Jared Goff is going to be on some good teams, and he's going to play in some big games, some very meaningful games. So he has a chance to establish himself among the best in the game if he's not there already. But I just don't see him ever being like a type of guy where we look back and we say, wow, Jared Goff was this, you know, was he put him in a category with. I think Mahomes and maybe Mayfield have the chance where we talk about them. And maybe Wentz, he was on his way there before the knee injury, but we talk about, you know, these guys, we put them in the conversation with some of the Aaron Rodgerses and Tom Brady's. Long way to go. Like, you don't even want to even put them that on them right now, but if you had to pick some guys that could be in there, Mahomes, Mayfield, Wentz could be the guys that I would put in there. Maybe Deshaun Watson, we'll see. I don't know. I think he was on his way, but the ACL mobile quarterback thing doesn't work out too well. So Trubisky, the biggest bust candidate, Mahomes, Mayfield, Wentz, possibly the biggest future Hall of Famer candidate, Josh Allen, probably the biggest question mark in all of it, because he's got all the tools and the talent, and he could be anywhere from a legit all pro year in, year out quarterback, big arm, to, you know, fizzling out of the league in 3-4 years because he can't figure it out and put it all together. So that's my young NFL quarterback rundown. There's a lot of them throughout the league. It's really fun right now because there's so many young, talented quarterbacks, and to take this thing to the next generation. So there you have it. I'm going to be back with some baseball. Stay there. We'll be right back. Hey, real quick, I left Jimmy G. Jimmy Garoppolo out of a lot of that conversation, but he's the most recent guy to get the ACL, so that's probably subconsciously. He had a chance, had he stayed healthy, to be up there with any of them, but I just don't think ACL quarterbacks are so hard for me to judge. Tom Brady came back from an ACL. You know, Carson Palmer did it. Carson Palmer wasn't really ever the same after that. Tom Brady, obviously, but I think he has like the super medicine. Like he's in that group that gets, like, you know what I mean? Like I feel like there's a special society of people that get like special drugs and special like things. Like if they get a disease or something, it's like they get the immune pill. And so I think Tom Brady is in that society where he gets that shit. So, that is, you know, that's ACLs are just tough for me to gauge, but all right, so not sure what happened there, but we had some technical difficulties, but I want to get into some baseball. The last time we spoke, since we talked last, or since I did one of these, the Atlanta Braves have won the NL East, and I just want to go on record that back in April, I said that the Atlanta Braves were going to the playoffs. So once again, I told Leo, motherfucker, that the Braves were going to the playoffs, and there's sources out there that can confirm that. I told all my baseball people that the Braves were going to the playoffs, and it happened. So once again, Wolfman J, I'm batting about my OPS and my weighted OBA for, I mean, off the fucking charts. And I'm probably batting like 900 right now. So, since I started doing this. Anyway, my guy Freddie Freeman, I knew that team was going to, they were young, they were going to come together. They had tons of talent. Once teams like that start believing in themselves and feeding off of each other, and then their young pitching started to come around. And Fulton Nevitz, he's a stud. You know what I mean? Big arm, you know. So once that thing started rolling and they started to pick up steam and the bullpen plate was pitching well, I knew it was going to be good. Freddie Freeman, I was on that dude his rookie season. I took that guy from a boy to a man in my fantasy baseball league. So I was on him from the beginning. I think he's the best first baseman in the league. He hits for average. He's got some power, even though he's probably might not have like the prototypical big pie. I think he's got like 23, 24 home runs, but he's still one of the best hitters in the National League. He probably fell out of the MVP race in the last couple of weeks, but the Braves are for real, and they're going to be a dangerous team in the postseason. They're going to be young and excited, so look out for them. I also called from June that the Nats were going to fall off, and it was going to be a two-team race in the NL East between the Braves and the Phillies, and that was exactly right as well. So once again, pat on the back. Does somebody ring the bell? The Phillies fell off they really fell the fuck off. They actually fell the fuck off, and they got back in, and then they had the four-game series with the Braves for a chance to really get back in. They shit all over themselves. But the Phillies will be there next year. You know, they got a lot of young players. Aaron Nola looks like he is one of the premier pitchers in all of baseball. But I called that the Nats weren't going to do shit. They have good players. Max Scherzer's probably the best pitcher in the league. Or if not him, then it's probably between him, DeGrom, maybe Chris Sale. I don't think you could put Kershaw in that cyborg category anymore just because he's fallen off a little bit. FIP is 307 or something like that. And he's battled some injuries. So I have Kershaw just below those guys. So, yeah. But Scherzer, I mean, and then you got the Nats. You got Turner and Harper and, you know, Rendon, you know, so they got some big sticks over there. They just don't have, there's, for some reason, they could just never, they can never be, like, they're a playoff team, but they're never an elite team. And I figured that the Braves were the better team. I didn't know about the Phillies, but there's just something about the Nationals that, you know, the Phillies were coming together as well. So anyway, NL East called that shit. It's everything else in the National League is getting pretty tight. You have the Cubs with a game and a half lead over the Brewers. The Brewers and the Cardinals are playing each other. The Rockies are a game and a half back of the Dodgers, but they picked up a full game on the Cardinals last night, so they're now a half a game back in the wild card race. And I'm gonna lay it out for you, okay? This is the scenarios. This is how it's gonna happen, okay? I'll give you the ifs, okay? If the Cardinals, let's say, I think there's six games left, right? If the Cardinals win out, they are going to win the division, okay? I don't know. They're 4.5 games back of the Cubs right now. Okay, so MLB continued. I think if the Cardinals win out, I think they leapfrog both the Brewers and the Cubs to win the Central, right? I think the Cubs need another win to clinch a playoff berth, at least the second wild card spot. I think if the Cardinals win out, the Cubs are the second wild card because they're going to finish behind the Brewers because the Cubs would have been swept by the Cardinals the last three games of the season, and I think they're at best going to split with the Pirates, right? So the Cubs could potentially finish 2-4, or I'm sorry, yeah, 2-4, whereas the Brewers have the Tigers, and I believe that series is at home, and you got to believe that the Brewers are at least going to win two of those three games. So they would finish 2-4 also. So actually the Cubs would finish with the first wild card ahead of the Brewers if that happens. If the Brewers sweep the Tigers, the Cubs would, I believe they would finish in a tie because the Brewers are a game and a half out right now, right? The Brewers would finish 3-2, whereas the Cubs would finish 2-4. They would pick up a game and a half. Yeah, so it would be a tie. If the Brewers sweep the Tigers but lose the next two games to the Cardinals, right? If the Brewers beat the Cardinals once, I'm pretty sure they eliminate the Cardinals from overtaking them, and they eliminate them from the division race, I believe. So the Cardinals have to win out, but if they do, they win the division. If they lose one more time, they don't have any chance to win the division. However, they could still win the wild card, but they're only a half game up on the Rockies right now. So if they do lose again, so they're in danger. If they win out, they could win the division. If they lose one more time, they might not even be in the wild card game as it would stand at that moment, right? Because if the Cardinals lose tonight and the Rockies win, the Rockies are actually the second wild card team as it would stand. if the Brewers win tonight and the Cubs lose, that means that the Brewers would be a half a game out of the division lead. So, because right now the Brewers sit a game back in the win column and two games back in the loss column. I'm just trying to figure out every scenario. There's a lot that could still happen, you know, in the final six games. And the Cardinals only actually have five games left. Most of these teams... Okay, so, yeah, the Rockies are a half game out. So the Cardinals lose... The Cardinals win tonight. They would be two games back of the Brewers. And if the Cubs would lose, they'd be three and a half out of the division lead. So if they won again, let's say that they win again on Wednesday, they would be a game back of the Brewers. And let's say, whatever, the Cubs lose, they'd be two and a half out. And then, okay, so, and then they sweep the Cubs, let's say. They would finish ahead of the Cubs. But the Cubs would have to really collapse. Right, I think they would have to get swept by the Pirates. I don't know. Anyway, I'm probably boring the shit out of you with that. Let's just say that there's a lot of shit that could still happen, and the Dodgers are still in play here because they could still lose the division, and they could still finish behind either one of the Cardinals, Brewers, or Cubs for the wild card. Right? So right now, it's just crazy that thinking that right now the best team in the National League has not clinched a playoff spot yet, and they could still miss the playoffs. The Cubs have basically led the division wire to wire, and if they fall apart now, it's going to be tough. They're trying like hell to hold off on the Brewers. I think are their biggest concern right now, as far as they want to win the division. They're not thinking about the wild card. They want to hold off the Brewers. So I think right now, if you're a Cub fan, you have to root for the Cardinals to win tonight. And, you know, hopefully the Cubs win and take care of business. Cardinals win tonight, the Brewers would be two and a half out. And the Cardinals would still be four and a half out. And the magic number shrinks at that point to three. And the Cardinal elimination number for the division would be one game. So then let's just take three out of four from Pittsburgh and not have to worry about it. At that point, I think that that's what the Cubs need to do, and then let everything else play out like the fuck it wants to, right? Just a lot. There's still some shit to be figured out. The Braves are sitting back, smoking their cigars, feet kicked up, like ready to roll. Crazy that the Rockies, they lost Trevor Story, but they're still winning. The Dodgers are kicking everybody's ass. They're winning games like 10 to nothing. They are not fucking around. Like, they are not fucking around. And they're going to be a dangerous team if they get into the postseason with Machado and that offense. Cubs are fucking on fumes right now. So, they need to get into... If they do get into the playoffs, they just need to fucking start over and regroup. You know what I mean? They need to give Chris Bryant his steroid shot in the shoulder. Get that thing at least to 77% and hold off on the surgery until after the playoffs. And then Kyle Schwarber coming back is a big offensive upgrade. I think they miss him in the lineup, and I think you saw that when he was down, they had trouble scoring. And, you know, even though he's inconsistent as well with the rest of them, you know, he's still a big bat from the left side and, you know, best left fielder in the game. So... there's that, man. A lot to be decided. The Cardinals got the fuck up. They fired Mike Matheny and then all of a sudden decided they want to get into the playoff race. Just crazy there. You know, let's see how it broke down in the... It looks like, you know, like Oakland's a game and a half back of the Yankees for that first wild card. That's pretty much the only thing that's left to go over there. Where that game is going to be played is pretty much the only thing that's not decided yet. Yankees are playing pretty well, though. You know, for all the shit, you know, and all the struggles that the Cubs have had, they're still 6-4 in their last 10. You know what I mean? Like, we're quick to jump on the Cubs, but I don't know. They're still 6-4. Actually, all three of those teams are 6-4 between the Brewers, Cardinals, and Cubs. So nobody's gained any ground in the last 10 games. It's stayed exactly the same. Cubs just need to win tonight. The Addison Russell saga. Can I talk about that for a second? I better take a drink before I get into this one. Oh, good old protein. It does about a good. Addison Russell, that whole thing pisses me off. Regardless, I don't, like, so, whatever he did aside, right, it's gross and disgusting and all that shit, right? I'm not condoning that type of behavior. I just think it's fucking ridiculous that a woman or anyone on the other side of a relationship, man or woman, for them to be able to say that XYZ happened, and for that to be enough justification for somebody to be get suspended from their job is absolutely mind-boggling to me. I cannot believe that. They've been investigating this for a year. She didn't want to cooperate with any of the investigation. Okay, it came from a third party before, and now she makes this post. First of all, what she said in the post could be any failed relationship. You're gonna have everybody's the victim in every failed relationship. I'm sure he could say she emotionally abused me and this and that. You know what I mean? Whatever. She didn't get into the physical abuse. So why is she gonna make a post where she lays it all out on the table, but she doesn't say anything about the physical abuse? If you're going to do that, go all the way. You know what I mean? You need to give every detail if you're going to give any details. If it's that serious where you're going to get this guy potentially fired from his job, you need to lay it all out there so that there's no gray area. Okay? And like I said, it sounds like every other failed relationship that there's ever been in the history of the world. Everybody feels abandoned. You know what I mean? She said that she felt abandoned in the relationship. That happens. That's what happens when the relationship doesn't work out. So, again, I'm not condoning anything. And whatever Addison Russell potentially did, I just think it's egregious that it comes down to a she said, he said, she said thing, and this is actually like, I mean, you have his girlfriend right now defending him, saying he's never done these things, and that she is a scorned ex, right? So why don't you take, so does that matter? Does that, what she says, does that factor into this investigation? Like, because it's the same thing, it's a statement, you know? So, I just think it's absolutely crazy. There's a lot of people, like Scoop City, thinks that, I've heard that Addison Russell is a shitbag. It doesn't, but really, that's not the point, right? The point is that, I don't know, like, I just don't understand how a he said, she said debate could potentially cost somebody their livelihood. It's absolutely insane to me. I'm not saying who's right or wrong, and I'm not saying what's right or wrong. I'm just saying that I don't agree with. And yeah, I'll leave it at that. So I can't wait for the playoffs to start in baseball. My hope is that Addison Russell can come back at some point. And again, there's going to be a numbers game there. So that could have just made it a lot easier with Addison Russell being suspended. But I hope he comes back because he can help the team. Even though he is not a good hitter, and I've said he's not a good hitter for forever. He's a terrible at bat. But his defense could come in very handy, and it could be very valuable in the playoffs. So, yep, we're looking forward to the playoffs. This time next week, we're going to know who's in and who's out. The season ends Sunday. So the Cubs, they have a lot in front of them. They just have They just have to win. They lost last night. It was just a typical Cubs fucking meltdown 5-1 loss. I don't like that they're playing the Pirates right now. The Pirates would love nothing more than to spoil. The Pirates don't like them to begin with. They would like nothing more than to spoil this shit for the Cubs. They have nothing to lose, and it's not fair. But at the end of the day, and they're a good team. They're an over 500 team. So the Cubs just need to figure it out. They need to get this thing done. So hopefully the next time we talk, it's a little bit more comfortable for the Cubs, and we'll go from there. So I don't know what else we got. I'm going to come back. Should we put a bow on this whole Machine Gun Kelly Eminem thing? I think we should. I think it's run its course, and it's just about over. So let's do that. I'll be right back. Bye now. By the way, I just want to add that the background music for all these tracks, I just pick it. I don't know what it's going to sound like. So if there is like a weird background track for any of this stuff, you know, I just blind faith go in. If the name looks cool, I pick it. So, but I don't know what it sounds like. So we hear it together. So it's, you know, that's what it is. So with that said, I want to talk about, okay. I really hope that you guys did not pay as much attention to the Machine Gun Kelly Eminem saga, beef, whatever, as I did. First of all, you know, if you listen to the last one, you know where I stand on the diss tracks, right? I think Eminem's was better. Everybody graded Machine Gun Kelly's on a curve and to scale. It was good for him. However, it really wasn't that good. Whereas Eminem, you know, it was really good. But for him, it might not have been as best as he probably would have came up with had Machine Gun Kelly responded. Whatever, blah, 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 blah. It was still a great track and way better than what anything Machine Gun Kelly's ever done. But Machine Gun Kelly decided to drop an EP last Friday, and anybody that listened to any of that knows how fucking garbage it was. And, like, by the second song, I thought, oh my god, I've been played. Like, first of all, I felt stupid for buying into this whole thing. Then Eminem has to feel stupid for buying. Like, this dude, that music, like, I don't even know. It was just terrible, right? And you could tell that he put that together in about 5 minutes. He was going to cash in on him being in the spotlight, and he was going to ride it for what it's worth. I don't blame him for that. I'm just saying, this was your time. This was your chance. Put a little bit of effort into it. I mean, the sky was the limit. Like, he had the moment. The spotlight was on, and he came out with that. That not only, you know, did he not step up, but he probably hurt himself in the process. And like I said, Eminem probably feels dumb for even putting that guy on any level with, as far as any rap level, like giving that dude legitimacy as far as like the way that he did with the rap song, with the diss track and, you know, the whole thing and the interview and mentioning his name, like, damn, dude. I mean, that was horrible. But the one thing that's left through in this whole thing, right? MGK is probably done. He can't respond anymore, obviously. If anybody listened to the EP, you know that he probably doesn't have anything left. His whole diss track was paint by numbers. Eminem is old. You know, his stuff was better 10 years ago. And that's basically it. And his beard's weird. And, you know, that's pretty much it. From the start to finish of the track, the one thing that's left, and Eminem probably did this on purpose. He put Diddy into the diss track, probably to make it about something bigger than MGK. But when MGK fell off, he could kind of keep this going to maybe keep himself relevant, right? Which was smart, because now Diddy has to respond to the allegations of what Eminem said, where he got Tupac killed, right? So it's going to keep going. MGK is going to fall off, but Eminem will stay relevant with this, which was super smart. So now we're waiting for Diddy to respond. So I still have to pay attention. You don't have to pay attention. I will do it for you, and I will update it right here on House Money Sports, and we'll see what happens there. So that's about enough for that. We'll see what comes out of that. We'll see if Diddy comes back, and we'll see what happens with Joe Budden and all that stuff. I'll keep you posted. So, I don't know, what else is going on? Is there any other little nuggets, tidbits, that we would like to discuss? I'm pretty sure I blew my UCL out playing three games back-to-back-to-back softball the other night. I did hit a two-run fucking bomb on my first swing in about 10 years. So, that happened. But other than that, I think that's, I think we're good to go. So until next time, for House Money Sports, I'm the Wolfman Jay. Shark G will probably be back on the next one. If not, I will be here. I won't let you down. And that's it. Till next time, butt out.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.